Welcome into another edition of The Beacon, and boy, the weather is actually turning nice around here.
Oh, spring has sprung, baby.
Put it in any better words.
Thank you.
I mean, that is the perfect way to describe it.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
I'm telling you, that's good. Well, we're finally back in town.
You guys are.
We're back in town. We've got our home and everything else, so we're going to sit back, relax, and enjoy being back as being a Chicagoan, which we should have never stopped being.
But you know what? You guys really wanted to try out Florida. I know Stacy wanted to be there. She had wanted to be there for years, and if you hadn't gone, you would have always just kind of been like, I wish I were in Florida.
Yep.
I wish I had gone to Florida, you know, and so you guys did it. It's not for you. Now you know.
Oh, God,
you can kind of just come back and move on.
Oh, it's God's waiting room, like Jonathan Winters said.
Right.
Absolutely.
God's waiting room.
There's nothing to do down there.
That's fantastic.
You know, unless you like to golf or play tennis.
Yeah.
You know, then all you have to do is spring a 10 and you're through.
Yeah, yeah. God's waiting room. That's great.
It's
love
all
it.
Over. You know? You get a flat and that's it. You know, it's all over for the day.
That's so funny. Cool.
But they can have the heat. They can have the humidity.
Yeah.
They can have the lack of pay.
Yeah.
Do you know what they do with the teachers down there?
Oh, what?
The teachers can go to work for the public schools.
Yeah.
But if they leave to go do something else and want to come back, they penalize them.
Really?
Yes.
You know, our country is so backwards in terms of
how. No, it's Florida that's backwards.
Well, I mean, Florida, that's a absolutely horrible policy. But I think teachers in general are not treated well. I think teachers have the most important job on the planet. They educate our children who then grow up to become our leaders. And if they don't have the resources to do it right, these children go astray, which is why our prisons are packed wall to wall.
Right, and you're lucky that Reese is as intelligent as she is.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate that she's in a good school. But you know what? Not everybody, and even the teachers there, you know, they have to pay for their own resources. They have to pay for, I mean, I was reading something the other day, and it said, you know, do we expect police officers to pay for their own guns and their own vests? And that, you know, it's no, of course not. But we then expect teachers to pay for their own supplies. We don't give them the resources they need to take care of, to do their jobs to the best of their abilities.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I it's no wonder why we have such a crime-ridden society, because these kids don't get the resources and support they need at a very young age. And so they grow up and they just go astray.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't get it. It seems like such a simple solution. Invest in our schools when these kids are young and you will have a society full of upstanding citizens.
Upstanding citizens and intelligent citizens.
They don't want to. They'd rather invest in our prisons.
They'd rather fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I agree.
So what are we doing this week?
Oh, what are we doing this week? We are talking to Dr. Demetrios Vavas.
Yes.
He's going to be talking about recent research done at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary on how cholesterol drugs can help treat AMD.
Where do you hear this?
Cool.
This is really cool.
Is this a new?
A Lipitor. They take Lipitor.
Okay.
And normally when you have a heart problem, you get Lipitor, but maybe 5-10 milligrams, right?
Okay.
Well, for the eye, they give you 80.
Wow.
80 milligrams.
As a pill?
Here's the deal.
Okay.
It actually works.
Wow.
Where it's cleared up vision, but not for all types of AMD now.
Okay.
This doesn't work for every one of them.
Okay.
But it does definitely work for some where it actually improves vision.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he's got some very interesting information for us too.
That's pretty phenomenal.
Yep, that's it. And then we've got Sandy's Corner.
We do.
And you're going to stop by for the
turn up the beat.
Is this the last installment for smoothies?
This is it.
All right.
Goodbye, smoothie series.
You better stick with us there, and then Tom's Corner.
That's it.
All right, we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Demetrios Vavas, who was a great guy to talk to.
Cool.
Coming up right after this.
Exercise is hard. So is maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, neither is half as hard as dying. Sadly, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and stroke kill nearly a million people a year. Even sadder, most of these deaths are preventable with a few lifestyle changes, including regular activity, healthier eating, and not smoking. Talk to your doctor about your risk for type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And if your doctor recommends lifestyle changes or medication, listen. The reason so many die is because not enough are willing to change. You can stop it, starting right now. It's your life. Listen to your doctor. Eat better. Get moving. Visit checkupamerica.org or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association.
Hello, I'm Bill Curtis. From its simple beginnings right here on Chicago's West Side, where it was founded in 1906, it has grown into one of America's most comprehensive social service agencies, serving people who are blind or visually impaired. Today, the Chicago Lighthouse offers world-class services in vision care, adaptive technology, job training and placement, rehabilitation, education, and many other areas. As more and more elderly Americans cope with vision loss, the Lighthouse will face greater challenges in expanding its critical programs. To see how you can help, please call 312-666-1331 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org. The Chicago Lighthouse, seeing what's possible for more than 100 years.
You know, on our Beacon program, we like to give you the latest information available on AMD. And for those of you who are joining our program for the first time, AMD means adult onset macular degeneration. There's been a lot of work being done in it, and Demetrius Vavas is a researcher, I believe probably a professor over at Harvard University, and he has collaborated with colleagues over in Europe, and they're testing an interesting drug that you may already have heard about, but they are using a drug that is currently on the market to try and combat AMD. Demetrius, welcome to the program. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Would you tell us a little bit about your study and how long it's been going on?
Yes, our study involved a specific set of patients with AMD.
Mm-hmm.
These are patients that they have advanced features of AMD, not necessarily decreased visual acuity, but they have high-risk features for progression, and they have what we called lipid deposits under the retina as a drusenoid pigment epithelial detachment. These are basically very large accumulations of lipid deposits and debris under the retina. And we hypothesized that these people, this particular subset of AMD people, this is not for everybody with AMD, this is for this particular subset of AMD people, that they may benefit from high-dose statin. That
okay.
is, available to everybody for heart disease.
I was just going to say, it's more thought of to be medication for heart condition.
Correct. And the reason why we felt that this medication may benefit this particular population of AMD patients is because many of us in the field of AMD have seen that there are similarities between these particular deposits of lipid in AMD patients and the deposits of lipids that they happen in the vessels, in the coronary arteries and in the carotid arteries of patients with cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
So in the field, there is this hypothesis that there is similarities between the pathogenesis, the generation of these two diseases, the lipid deposits in the coronary arteries and in the carotid arteries, and these lipid deposits under the retina. So there has been an interest in seeing, do statins that we know benefit patients with cardiovascular disease, do they benefit patients with AMD?
Is it more effective with the wet version of AMD or the dry version?
Okay. So this is for the dry version of AMD. We tested it, and we found out that when we gave these patients, these 23 patients, high dose of statins, actually nobody converted to wet AMD. the expected ratio over the 1 year and a half of the study, every patient was about a minimum a year to 2 years on the drug, we expected about 15%, 14-point-something% of the patients to convert from the dry to wet AMD.
Mm-hmm.
Yet none of the patients converted. Now, this is a small study, and we have something in science that we call alpha error. What is the chance that we made a mistake in this finding? And the alpha error in this case of this study is actually very small. It's 2.1%.
Wow.
So, you know, we were very excited about the potential that this drug not only may reverse these lipid deposits in AMD, but actually may help the patients not to convert to wet AMD. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have to have a bigger trial to verify these results. Mm-hmm. But these are exciting early signals.
What kind of age range are you looking at, the people that participated in the study?
So the people that participated in the study had to be over the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were in their 60s. But they had in particular the imaging of the eyes has to fulfill certain criteria. So there is different appearances of AMD when we look inside the eye.
Mm-hmm.
There are some patients, they have this large lipid deposit. There are some patients, they have small drusens. There are some patients, they have pigment changes mostly. There are some patients, they have atrophic changes. And then there are patients, they have the wet AMD.
Okay.
So as you've seen already, I've described like five major subtypes of AMD. So this was applicable to one of them. This was applicable to the patient that had multiple large lipid deposits under the retina.
Mm-hmm.
It was not applicable to the patient that had atrophic changes. It was not applicable to the patient that had mostly pigment changes, although they could have had pigment changes, but they had to have large lipid deposits. This was the patient that we selected for.
And now the interesting thing, too, is that you and I were talking off of the air about the drug that normally for use in cardiac treatment, it's 5 or 10 milligrams.
Yes.
But you have a much higher dose than that,
much
correct?
Higher dose, yes. And we feel that this was important because, again, we look at the cardiovascular literature, and we found out that if we study the cardiovascular literature, these low doses of 5 and 10 milligrams of a drug, of Lipitor or atorvastatin, we use a generic form, they do not reverse the disease. They may arrest or they may reduce the morbidity and mortality in the future, but they do not reverse the disease. Now, in the cardiovascular literature, we know that if you give 80 milligrams, the high dose, the super high dose, you can see not only arrest of the disease, but you can actually see a reversal. There are MRI images of the carotid arteries that they saw that these lipid deposits in the arteries, that they narrow the arteries, they actually reverse over 2 years with high-dose Lipitor.
Do you see an improvement in vision as well?
Yes. So the patient that they responded, and this is an important point here, not every patient responded in this year and a half, 10 out of 23 patients responded. And what do we mean by response? They actually reversed the lipid deposits left and the vision improved. So they had both a reversal of the anatomical findings of this lipid deposit, but in addition they had an improvement in the visual function, which was a first in AMD research, and it's very encouraging and exciting.
I can imagine it will be. Where do you go from here now with the study?
So, like every phase 1-2 trial, because they're not controlled and there's small numbers of patients, you cannot make absolute conclusions. It gives you a hint what to study, but you cannot conclude things.
Sure.
So we do have to do what is called a larger, some people call it phase 3 trial, but a larger trial of basically 100 to 300 patients, that you randomize them now, mm-hmm. placebo versus the drug, and you observe them over the next 2 years to see if you can verify the signals you got from this pilot phase 1, phase 2
sure.
non-controlled trial. And that's what we're going to do right now. We're discussing with some pharmaceutical companies and with NIH to be able to sponsor a larger trial, find basically the funding for a larger trial.
Have you seen a difference in the people or the participants in Greece versus the participants in the United States?
Excellent question. This is very important. And the good thing is that we do not see a difference, that this was applicable to people here or people from Europe. there was the same amount of people responding in Boston and in Europe.
Wow!
And that was very exciting, which means that it's not specific to just an ethnic group.
Well, not only an ethnic group, but as far as dietary habits and everything else too.
Exactly.
But that's fantastic. So the next project then will be to do a larger control group.
Correct.
To see if your the results that you got from the smaller groups are definitely active.
Exactly.
And then be able to hopefully help people. Because, I mean, this is tremendous. This is like the work being done in glaucoma where, it's more genetic.
Yes.
But it's actually getting to the point. I was talking to a guy from Harvard yesterday, who was talking about the whole thing is being genetically manufactured on how to treat a glaucoma, and you're talking about taking a drug that was originally had an intention for something totally different and making it work for the eye as well.
Exactly.
That sounds great. When do you think you're going to get the next phase started?
So we have already started contacting people, and we aim to start it by the end of this year, early next year, if we can find the funding. But there were already some companies have expressed interest. We presented the data in the Macular Society. Professor Miller presented the data at the Macular Society in Florida in the past month, a month ago, and we have interest from pharmaceutical companies to sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in discussion with them. It takes time to secure the required funding, but we're hopeful that within the next year we will be able to start the definitive trial.
Are you talking about the University of Miami, or are you talking about the institute down there? I can't think of the name of it.
Bascom Palmer. No, it just happened in Miami. This was the Macular Society. This is an academic society of retina specialists that it selects the people that they participate in this according to their contribution to the field.
Sure.
So this is not a meeting that any physician is a member. This is a society that only people that they have contributed to the field are members of.
Okay.
And the data were presented in that society. It's called the Macular Society.
Mm-hmm.
And people were quite excited, and we had interest from some pharmaceutical companies to sponsor now the definitive trial.
Now, are they going to be doing the same thing over in Europe as well?
Yes. This trial, part of the design of a trial to see and verify the results is to actually have it multi-center. This was a two-center trial. We want to have groups from Europe and several groups from the United States, and many of them have expressed interest to participate in this trial in Chicago as well. There's at least three groups in Chicago that they want to participate in such a trial.
I think that's fantastic. That is absolutely great. The larger sample, I'm sure, is going to give you the results that you're looking for. So I wish you the best of luck. Let me know when you're, I'm sure there's going to be a press release coming out, but I'd like to know when the actual study starts so we can talk again and refresh people's memories about it. And if there is some place that is doing work like that here, that we can get, people to see if they qualify to become a participant.
Exactly. That would be great.
All right. Well, Dimitri, thank you for joining us on the program.
No. Thank you very much for having me, Bill.
I really enjoy having you here, and we'll be in touch. We'll stay in touch for the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Our
program is The Beacon. We'll be back with more right after this.
What if magazines could talk? They can, thanks to Choice Magazine Listening, a free audio magazine for those unable to read standard print because of loss of vision or other disability. We'll send you recordings of memorable articles, fiction and poetry, read by the best professional voices. Selections are chosen by our editors from over 100 notable publications, such as The New Yorker, Smithsonian, Fortune, The Atlantic, Sports Illustrated, and Time. Choice Magazine Listening invites you to enjoy the unforgettable writing of the world's best minds. We'll also tell you how to get the free Library of Congress Special Player.
For your free subscription, call 1-888-7-CHOICE. That's 1-888-724-6423. Or on the web at www.choicemagazinelistening.org.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You know, drugs that are developed for a different use in the body.
It's amazing.
They can actually work and do a better job for, I shouldn't say that because I don't know what Lipitor does for people.
Right.
You know, cholesterol
with
and that.
With cholesterol, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just overwhelming how good it is.
Well, there's some very, very smart people in this world who...
Much smarter than me.
Woo! That's why we're sitting here talking about
you
it,
know
not
what?
Doing
I'm
it.
I'm lucky to... have the opportunities that I do to talk to these researchers.
Yeah.
Because every time I get off the phone with one of them, and Sandy will tell you that every time I get off the phone, I just sit there and I go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
How can somebody be that smart?
There are some very, very impressive brains in the world.
Yep, there
yeah.
really are. There
yeah.
really are. And speaking of an impressive brain in the world,
oh,
we are going to wrap up our smoothie series.
Oh, yes. This is rocket science right here. We're sure.
Yeah, but that's important, though, too.
I agree.
So we're going to let us turn up the beat. Lainey Kleeman and the last
of our smoothie series.
So, young lady, take it away.
Thank you, darling. Today I'm going to be talking about a substitute for Pediasure, which is Pediasure is a nutritional drink for children, but it's not. It's loaded with chemicals and sugar and all the typical stuff that I talk about week after week after week. So I've actually found a homemade recipe for Pediasure online, which is essentially, smoothies that's full of whole food. I make this for my kids daily. And they won't eat anything, but they will both, TJ especially.
Right.
TJ is just, he's just a junk, all he wants is junk food. He will sit down and he will suck this dry. So
my
I
man,
live by
though,
it.
Yeah. Junk food.
Oh yeah. And both he and my daughter will, repeatedly ask for this. So this has become a daily staple in our house.
Sure.
So this is a homemade replacement for Pediasure if you want to give your kids. And it's a great way to get in their greens and their fresh fruits and their fresh veggies and they think that they're getting a treat. So it's a win-win all around.
Okay.
So you're going to start with 2 cups of fresh spinach, 2 cups of liquid. You can use rice milk, almond milk, coconut milk, or water. I actually use coconut water, which is loaded with potassium, so I use that as my liquid.
Okay.
2 tablespoons of chia seed.
I heard of it.
Chia. Yes. Now, I don't love
chia. The thing that you kind of spray is spread on those animals at Christmas time.
That's what it is. That's exactly
what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Wow, that means I have a Santa Claus growing in my stomach.
Yep, that's that's right. So the chia seed, but chia seed actually gets really gelatinous when it gets wet.
Yeah.
And I made the mistake yesterday of putting it in my daughter's smoothie and making the smoothie, but she wasn't awake yet, so I just kind of let it sit until she was awake. But the chia seeds get really gelatinous, and then they don't blend well. They, blend in clumps, which she didn't like. So I would say hold off on the chia seed until right before you're ready to blend it, and then it pulverizes it so it doesn't get nearly... the texture of the smoothie gets a little bit fluffier.
Sure.
But it's not clumps of gelatinous seeds.
Right, and you can drink it then.
Right, exactly, exactly. So I also will use flax meal or hemp seed to blend in there as well. 1 cup of mango, fresh or frozen, 1 cup of pineapple, 2 bananas, and an ounce of microgreens, which you can get in the, like, buy the spinach and the kale at the grocery store. It comes in a little pint-sized container.
Okay.
And it's basically just, like, microgreens are sprouts, almost, of different types
okay.
of vegetables.
All
yeah.
Right.
So it's right. it's not as, they're not as pungent as sprouts are.
Sure.
But they're, you know, they're baby broccolis, and
sure.
they're great, but they look like sprouts, you know. They
right.
they haven't developed
right.
into the actual vegetable yet. So you can cool. find those typically in the grocery store near the green section.
Sure. Okay.
So you use an ounce of microgreens, and then you can put in, if you want a little more protein, put in a tablespoon of almond butter or peanut butter, something along those lines.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
And this serves three. I mean, this is a lot of fruit that you're putting in here, and so you don't want to sit down and drink it by yourself because it's a lot of sugar.
Right.
But so this is a three-person serving. And it's got, you know, it's loaded with vitamins and nutrients and all the healthy stuff that our kiddos need to stay healthy.
Sure.
So
did you happen to hear in a study not too long ago that they did, I think, at New York Hospital, where they said they've experimented with children
mm-hmm.
about peanuts.
Okay.
And they start giving peanuts at a very young age, and they don't have an allergy.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard that because they tell us now, or at least when TJ was an infant 4 years ago, don't give him peanuts until 2 years old, I think it was,
right.
you know, because they might have an allergy to it. But I think that they're finding that if they're exposed to these allergens at an early age, they are less likely to develop allergies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree with you.
Yep.
So that's it for this week.
That's it, baby.
Where will they find that recipe?
On our Facebook page at Chicago Beacon, or on Twitter at Chicago Beacon as well.
All right. And this is the Beacon program. We'll be back after this.
That smells good.
Well, look who came out of his man cave.
Game must be over.
Oh, babe, just checking on you and dinner.
Well, your summer clock is fast. It's gonna be a while. How about some celery?
Nah, that's rabbit food. There must be something good in here.
Well, why don't you why don't you...
You okay?
Oh,
honey!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke. Many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk. But it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Disability is something most people don't like to think about. But a 35-year-old man has a 1 in 5 chance of becoming disabled during his working lifetime. A woman of the same age has a 1 in 4 chance. If you become disabled and are unable to work, you may apply for Social Security disability benefits. There are 2 ways you can apply. The fastest and most convenient way is online at www.socialsecurity.gov. Or you may call 1-800-772-1213 to make an appointment to apply at your local Social Security office, or to set up an appointment for someone to take your application over the phone. Learn more about disability benefits and take advantage of the helpful Disability Starter Kit at www.socialsecurity.gov/disability. That's www.socialsecurity.gov/disability.
Well, Miss Murillo is here waiting, but she's going to have to wait just a few minutes. Because, you know, we air this program every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 on WCPT. And then it airs again on Wednesday night on Chris Radio, which you can access by the Chicago Lighthouse website. And, you know, go to the banner marked for Chris Radio. Listen live, and you'll be able to hear the show again, especially for the recipe, because that's a pretty involved recipe this week.
Yes, it was. There was a lot to it.
Yep, that was a pretty involved recipe. And then we had, you know, whatever else is on the show that you may be interested in.
Yeah, we talked to Dr. Demetrios Babas this week about the cholesterol, about Lipitor helping AMD.
Sure.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff.
You can find out what's going on the program that way, or you can podcast us, too. And that happens as of noontime on Monday. So there's no excuse for you to say, I'm not getting in the show. Because we give you all kinds of opportunities to get the show.
That's right.
Well, Sandy Murillo, of course, is just a wonderful very, very talented and very, very terrific journalist. And she's going to join us now to tell us all about what's on Sandy's View.
Once again, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sandy's View. Here at the Lighthouse, we always emphasize how vision loss doesn't have to stop you from pursuing your dreams or goals and how you can become independent in spite of vision loss. This morning, I'm speaking with John Erickson, who's the author of the book called What I Saw When I Went Blind. John is going to share with us some of his experiences with vision loss and things that he has learned over the years. John, thanks for joining us this Saturday morning.
Thank you very much, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, John, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you lose your vision?
I was in junior high at the time, and as a little kid, I wore glasses, just had a minor correction in my vision. And at one point in time, I started getting some serious headaches and a number of other problems, and got that diagnosed as, not a big deal, seventh grade, big transition. And some months later, I started to notice I couldn't see the blackboard when I was in the room. And from there, I went to the eye doctor and from there to the hospital. And what the problem was, I had a pressure building up in my head, inside my brain, mm-hmm. that eventually was damaging my optic nerves. And over the next 3 years, I had actually probably about 9 different operations before they eventually kind of did it right and ended the pressure. Mm-hmm. And by that time, I was totally blind in my right eye and legally blind in the left.
Mm-hmm. Well, so all of this happened during junior high, which is, definitely a hard time of transition for most, teenagers and people during that age. So how were the initial moments of, adapting, and how was it adapting to vision loss?
Well, as you said, there's a lot of things going on when you're that age, junior high, and you're transitioning physically, and you're transitioning to junior high and high school into a much more difficult environment. And at the same time, I was going through the same experience mm-hmm. that I think anyone that has any kind of vision loss is going through. That one day you can do something just fine, the next day you can't do that anymore, mm-hmm. and you try to cope with that and that. So there was a lot of moving parts and a lot of frustration and I think confusion at that time. Luckily, I wasn't old enough to say, I'll take this direction, I'll take that direction. I was just kind of at the mercy of the doctors and mm-hmm. and in between the operations, always trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my hands full. I certainly had things to do because my father, he took a really good view about it in retrospect. He just kind of said, we don't have to answer questions about what the future holds. All we have to do is worry about this semester or the next semester. Let's get those books ordered. Let's get those books on tape. Let's do this, let's do that. And just all that busyness helped the time pass along.
Yeah, and I do know that in your book you share a lot of anecdotes and, experiences that have helped you. One of them being is, going on to college and some of the things you learned while in college as a person with vision loss, that there was a difference between high school as opposed to college. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. In high school, I had a dean who was very proactive. He notified the teachers that I'd be in the class, and he set up volunteer readers for me during my study halls. It also supported me to get the books taped and everything well. I started my freshman year at college down at Notre Dame and nothing. Mm-hmm. That was a number of years ago, and before there were a lot of departments of student affairs or student activities.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of all of a sudden found myself just kind of floundering and realized, oh my gosh, I got to do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about the readers I had in high school, and the best ones were girls, were women. So I put, you know, signs up in the female dorms that a visually impaired student needed help reading, and I actually paid them because I wanted to be a, didn't want to be a volunteer event. I wanted to be a this transaction. You know, I wanted to take it very seriously, and also as far as class selection, I didn't just go to a person that was going to coach me or, you know, or just recommend classes. I had freshman year, I got put in a class I had no business in, and actually, at the end of the first lecture, I had my brailler with me, you know, making its usual noise, and it was a big audience, a big auditorium. And the professor came back up to me and said, "You'll have to find a different way to take your notes. You seem to be just disrupting the students around you."
Oh, wow.
And, of course, he hadn't said to anyone, he hadn't said Mr. Erickson in the back is using a braille typewriter because he can't see. He didn't tell people, you know, so there's this racket going on. And everyone's turning their heads and looking around, and, you know, his answer was, "You'll have to find a different way." Well, the lesson I learned from that was, you know, I want, you know, professors or teachers to introduce me, you know, or to every class, explain what was going to happen, and tell them, of course, that if anyone couldn't cope with the brailler or didn't, you know, just to tell him, and I would take, you know, actions to change it. But I never had a problem after that. Once I met my profs ahead of time, told them to explain to the class what the situation would be, and that worked out really well.
Yeah, no, and that's certainly an important thing for students, you know, regardless of, you know, what time period they are. You know, obviously, you know, you're talking about the brailler and some of, you know, hiring readers. Now with assistive technology, you know, a lot of students are able to read some of the stuff more independently with the technology. But regardless, you know, advocacy is so important for a student with a disability, and, you know, getting your needs known. And like you mentioned to me earlier, you're the only person that knows best, you know, what you need. So it, you know, it sounds like that was one of the lessons you learned after.
Exactly. You know, you can't be afraid to ask for the, you know, the aids and appliances or the, you know, accommodations that need to be met. As a matter of fact, you know, when I went to school, it wasn't a law. Today, there's a law, you know, that you have to make reasonable accommodations, you know, for whether it's just a student or, you know, or that for anything. And so it's hard when you're younger, maybe for the first time, to be comfortable doing that, you know, but it's just something you got to get better and better at.
Yeah, and you also mentioned something here at the Lighthouse. You know, we do work with young students, you know, recently graduated from college or people that are looking for employment. You know, we do work with them on interviewing skills or how to find employment. And one of the things that comes up often is whether or not they should disclose their vision impairment to the employers. What do you think about that?
Oh, I feel very strongly that a student, anyone interviewing for a job, should be very upfront about their vision impairment or vision loss. In fact, I think today, in today's environment, it's a positive factor that you cannot afford to bypass. For instance, if a company has contracts with the state or with the city, there are requirements about, you know, the number of handicapped or the number of impaired workers that that company might need to have. So you're saying, hey, I'm your guy. You need me. You know, I'm one of the best people to fill that role for you. So, you know, not only have I, you know, gotten where I've gotten academically, but, you know, I'm aggressive. I want to get a job. I'll work harder than most people. I'll be on time. And you just, you know, just put that out because, you know, being, you know, qualifying as a handicapped person for those kind of standards is not something that people can just make do with themselves. It's got to be, you know, something that you've got, and turn it around. Don't make it. Don't be apologizing for it. Make it a. Make it a. Don't make it a negative. Make it a positive, and tell them that that you're proud to be that person that they're going to hire.
For sure. For sure. And now, going back to what to your book, What I Saw When I Went Blind. Where can people find this book and read, you know, these and other stories and anecdotes?
Oh, okay. The book is at Amazon. You know, and it's also in a Kindle version at Amazon. It's also recorded by Learning Ally, formerly Recording for the Blind. It's on tape there. And currently, Westbow Press, the publisher, is having the audio version of my book made into an audio book. So that'll be available also at bookstores. And this actually is a rewrite of my very first book, which was called Let God's Work Be Displayed. After I wrote that book, and it was very much the same story of the situation, the anecdotes, and the people that I met, you know, as I grew older, but based on recommendations from agents and some publishers and some other people, I, rewrote this second book, What I Saw When I Went Blind.
Great. Well, that it's in, besides being in print, it's accessible also in audio. So, you know, anyone, whether blind or not blind, you know, can take a look and learn more, not just about your personal stories, but about vision loss and getting through life with vision loss. So good luck, and thanks again for being on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, Sandy, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. I want to tell the your listeners that if they're visually impaired, maybe there are some tips or lessons that they could learn. Just from my experiences, but also I wrote the book thinking about my parents when I was real young and first lost my sight. That not knowing what the future holds. Can a vision impaired child grow into is it realistic to expect that you can get a job or go on for a master's or different degrees? So I just wrote those kind of stories and anecdotes to address that, so that people get an idea of what it's like, and yet it's not, that doesn't seem like an impossibility.
Yeah, great. Well, again, John, thanks so much for being on the show with us this morning. And to all the audience, we do invite you to look at the book. Again, it's called What I Saw When I Went Blind, and the author is John Erickson. Thanks again, John, and have a great day.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show.
Welcome back.
Are you ready for these two characters?
I'm always ready for them.
I know. They're, you know what? They're so good.
They brighten my day.
They brighten my day, too, and I think they brighten a lot of our listeners' day as well.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going into the corner. We have to walk down the street over here, and it's nice weather now, so we don't mind doing that.
Now we can take our sweaters off.
Absolutely. Walk down, head up to the porch, tap on the door, and as we have that music going in the background, and Mr. Brian Hawkins and Mr. Tom Persky, Mr. IT, well, not IT, but Mr.
Technology.
Mr. Digital Technology is here to join
us. That's appropriate.
everyone. Welcome in. It's Tom's Corner. Brian Hawkins, along with Tom Persky. And Tom, good morning. How are you?
Brian, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing fine. It's great weather, great weekend. Still recovering from all the eats on Memorial Day. But otherwise, I'm just great.
Yeah, that's good. And usually in Chicago is when the Cubs, they call it the June swoon, you know. This year, I think we're going to be okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
We'll see. But for those of you tuning in today to hear about the latest gadgetry that's available, video magnifiers is a subject. And you've got some that you want to talk about, the Explorer?
The Explorer series, and this is a new series from Humanware of the video magnifiers. You know, I've been using a magnifying glass to help me read with magnification for many, many years now. And it's interesting, the young people who have low vision like myself, when I see them using their smartphone, mm-hmm. or they use everything but a magnifying glass. So sometimes I think mine's going to be in a museum very soon. But, you know, one of the things we try to tell people is you need to have a toolbox filled with the right tools for each situation, because unfortunately, if you have macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, these eye conditions, there is no one pair of glasses anymore that can help you with all these different visual tasks. Mm-hmm. And so the toolbox, you know, it takes a while to figure out what tool do I need in which situation. And each tool has a benefit and sort of a drawback, too. So you have to learn to compromise a little bit of how am I going to be able to read. Mm-hmm. So if I need letters 10 times the normal size because I have a severe vision loss, a magnifying glass has a lot of drawbacks because they're small. The area gets smaller and smaller as it gets stronger. And so these new video magnifiers really can enhance. So, for instance, the Explorer 5, the one I've talked about here on the show before, goes from 2 times to 22 times the normal size. And so that really blows the magnifying glass away. And also, you can change the background colors, you know, make it white on black or yellow on black or a cyan on black. I mean, it just goes on and on. So what Humanware has decided to do is to put together a series, which I think is really good, of kind of a small, medium, and large screen size. Because part of the toolbox means, for instance, a person who was out and about a lot, shopping, going to restaurants, going places, they might enjoy just a small 3-inch screen. And the low cost of $295 is affordable, and it allows you to again control the amount of magnification. You can zoom in because it has an LED light on it. If you were in a dark restaurant, you could read with it. Mm-hmm. They've done something really clever too. You can plug it actually into a TV set. So many people now, in a little work area or maybe on their kitchen table, they can have a little flat screen TV. So when they're at home, they're not confined to that little 3-inch screen. They can just plug it in right to a television set. The Explorer 5 does that also. It plugs into a high definition port on any television. And these televisions now, they're about $100 is all. For a really nice, you know, flat screen TV.
So right.
The price has really come down. And then the 7-inch screen, I guess it would be for somebody who maybe is not going to carry it around as much. Maybe somebody who would leave it on their kitchen table, mm-hmm. but they don't want a large desktop magnifier.
Right.
And so they could just leave it on their table. And with a 7-inch screen, you could read, like, for many people, like a whole column of the newspaper at one time and not have to move the magnifier back, the video magnifier back and forth. And so these products, we have put them on our website. We have decided to purchase them in bulk, so we're actually selling them for the lowest cost of anyone in the country, which is pretty cool. So the Explorer 5 is normally $750. We're selling it for $595, and that'll be our normal price.
Wow.
And then the Explore 7 is normally $1,095.
Right.
We're selling it for $929. So we're passing along the savings to you. So this would be a really good time to come check these out here at our 1850 Tools for a Living store, or in Glenview at 222 Waukegan Road. And come in. We're open every day from 9 to 5. And you can just browse or come with a family member. Bring some of your personal items that you'd like to be able to read. And just test these units out and see what you think.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Also in June, you know, this is our end of our fiscal year. So we do a lot of inventory work. We're not doing as many shows, but we have some sales of inventory that we'd like to sell. And so we have portable magnifiers, also video magnifiers, that if you're in the market for and you'd like a really low cost one, we've taken $100 or $200 off some of the ones that we have in stock for last year's model. They're brand new still. The warranty's all good, but we've reduced the price.
All right.
And then we have demonstrator units that we've used in the store this last year, and we sell those at really, really low prices. So call the store if you're interested. It's 1-800-919-3375. 1-800-919-3375. And they'll have a list for you of all the ones. Or go to our LighthouseToolsForLiving.com, LighthouseToolsForLiving.com, and you'll see an entire list of all of our products, and there's a list of used and reduced items on there, too. So that website, by the way, has been reconfigured to make it much, much easier to order for people with low vision, and we're getting lots of good comments about that.
Oh, okay,
which
great.
Is good, yeah.
Now, as you said, not as many road shows this month because of the inventory that you're doing, but there are a couple, right?
There are. Coming up Tuesday, actually, which is the only show in June, which will be June 7th. In Schaumburg Township offices. It starts at 10 o'clock and goes to 3 o'clock. It's an open house, free to the public. So come in and see what's available for over 100 items of low vision devices. The address is 1 Illinois Boulevard in Hoffman Estates.
Okay.
So it's real close to like Friendship Village, which we've gone to before. So that's the Schaumburg Township offices. Then in July, on July 12th, we're going to be in Glenview again at our Chicago Lighthouse North location, 222 Waukegan Road. Again, that'll be from 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. And if you haven't been to Glenview, you should really come and check us out and see all the new things that are out there and see the new facility there. We really enjoy going to Glenview.
Now, do folks realize that when they do go to the road shows that they can purchase some items right there?
They can,
at the show?
Yeah, right. Many things we do have in stock that we bring with us. You know, the Lions provided us a new van so we can go out into the community and do all these shows. And some of the more expensive items, sometimes what we'll do is we'll order them during the show, and then when they arrive, we'll deliver that to the person's home, and we'll set that up, like some of these desktop CCTVs,
mm-hmm.
or devices that read out loud. So we provide the training and the support, and if anything goes wrong, you call us, and then we can, you know, provide repairs. So kind of we're a one-stop shop for all those kinds of things.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, he's Tom Persky. I'm Brian Hawkins. That'll do it for this week's Tom's Corner. Come back next week. We'll have more information. This is The Beacon.
Just say no to flushing your pharmaceuticals into the ocean. This is Sandra Tsinglo with the lowdown on science. Consider this. Humans take pharmaceuticals. Humans excrete pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals end up in waterways where shrimp live. Scientists from Britain's University of Portsmouth were concerned. They wanted to know if antidepressant drugs affect the behavior of freshwater shrimp. So they put the crustaceans in waters laced with the antidepressant fluoxetine, which we know as Prozac. And the result was not a funny SpongeBob episode. After 3 weeks, the scientists observed antinormal behavior, aka the shrimp were 5 times more likely to swim them toward light. Bad news, because shrimp thrive in dark, secret places, places where predators like birds or hungry humans can't get them. For a shrimp, staying alive means staying out of the light. The researchers say if enough drugs taint the water, shrimp are going to be in trouble, as will the rest of the food chain. So next time you flush your drugs down the toilet, remember, we're killing our shrimp. It's one more reason to be depressed, or rather, to throw away our drugs and cheer up.
The Lowdown on Science, online at lohdown.org. Produced by 89.3 KPCC and the California Institute of Technology, and made possible by TIAA Craft.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
That's going to do it for us this week. Full program. We really appreciate you being here. We hope you got a lot out of Dr. Vivitz's interview, because he had a tremendous segment on the program here this morning. And, of course, there was nothing wrong with the Let Us Turn Up the Beat segment.
Oh,
today.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It was adequate.
It was good. It was good. So.
It killed some time that we needed killed.
Well, we had to kill you. We beat it to death with that. So, at any rate, thanks to Dr. Janet Slick and the Board of Directors of the Chicago Lighthouse. They make this show possible every week. And who's that little young lady that comes in here?
Little Miss Murillo.
Yep, Sandra Murillo, who does our associate producer, helps line up guests, and also contributes with Sandy's View. And finally, last but certainly not least, you save the best for last.
You do.
And that's Mr. Brian Hawkins.
There he is.
He is by far one of the most talented people that I know. So that's going to take care of it for us. I'm Bill Shurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And we will see you back here on the Beacon.